About a decade ago, back then we didn't have this place, we started this thing of asking the guys. We did it once. It was like an idea. Hey, why don't we start the semester this way? Let's go to the Kotel and start the semester this way. We started it. And then the next year we decided it's a good thing. Let's keep it up. And then it became a ritual. Every year, once a year, the first Thursday of the semester, we come to the Kotel. And up until 3 years ago, Rabbi Nathan Siegel, of blessed memory, used to give the opening speech at the Kotel. And Rabbi Nathan Siegel just passed away about 10 days ago. He used to teach at the Machon. And it's hard for me to start tonight without mentioning him. We taught together, and he used to come to enrich our Thursday nights. He used to come and teach in a university program in the Old City. And on his way home to Efrat, I'd ask him to come in and give a few words of Hasidut during my class. I'd stop my class, and he'd give a story for 20 minutes, and then he'd continue his ride home. He'd come into class, and he told us a story, which I want to share with you, in his memory. It might not be the best story to begin a semester with, but it's the most powerful story I heard from him. So I'm going to share it with you, just so you get a little bit of a picture of who the wonderful Rabbi, Rabbi Nathan Siegel of blessed memory, was. And you could see his classes online. On my website, I have classes that he gave here at the Kotel with us. So he told us the following story. When he was young, he learned in Yeshiva University. Now, Yeshiva University is in the northern part of New York City, in Manhattan. And in order to fund his studies, he used to drive a taxi cab. So at the end of class, the other students didn't know he was driving a taxi cab. The students see him one day after class, running out of class, jumping into a taxi and driving off. So one student goes to the other one and goes, "Siegel just ran off with someone's taxi." They'd never seen him with a yellow taxi. They didn't know that he was driving a taxi to fund his studies. Well, he was studying in Yeshiva University, and they had a professor for psychology. And they were studying under this professor. They liked him a lot. And they asked him, they said, "You're so smart. You teach us so much about psychology. Can you tell us, you, as this great psychologist, professor of psychology, do you master yourself? Do you feel that because you know all this psychology, so you're in control of your mind and your thoughts, and you're in full control?" So he said, "No." He said, "As much as I've studied and as much as I can teach you, I'm not in full control. And I'll tell you what, I have a recurring dream, and as much as I work on myself using the skills I've studied, I can't stop the dream. I have a nightmare that keeps coming back to haunt me, and all my studies haven't made me knowledgeable enough to undo this nightmare." Fine, the story pauses. Rabbi Nathan Siegel goes on, he gets married, he makes aliyah, he learns how to be a sofer stam. He writes Sifrei Torah, he writes Ksubos, he's teaching at Machon Meir, he's starting to marry off kids. And then 5 years ago, he used to take people on tours of the different concentration camps throughout Europe. During the breaks, he'd fly out to Europe and lead tours and organize tours. He's on one tour, and as he's leading the group through a concentration camp, he always would pause in the middle, let the people contemplate what's going on, stop, and everyone could take a drink. And as they'd pause, he'd also ask each person who they are and where they're from and what their maiden name is. So there's one woman there in the group who he asks her, "Who are you?" She tells him. "Where are you from?" Tells him where she's from. "What's your maiden name?" She tells him. "And where do your ancestors come from?" And she tells him, he says, "Wait a second, I had a professor of psychology with the same last name, and he came from the same place." And she says, "That's my father." So he says, "Interesting, because he left a tremendous impression on me. And one of the things that really impressed me," and he tells her the story. And she says, "That's very interesting, because just a few weeks ago, my father called all of us children in. He's a very old man now. And he called us all into the room. And he said, 'I don't know what day I'm going to go, but I want to share with you what my nightmare is. You kids grew up in a house where you knew that many nights you'd hear me getting up and yelling, and you couldn't understand what I was saying. And you know I have a recurring nightmare. So I want to tell you what that nightmare is, because I don't know when I'm going to pass from the world. I want you to know what it is. So Rav Natan Siegel, decades after the story, is about to get to hear what his professor was dreaming about. And the story begins in a concentration camp. So the father, this woman's father, tells them, we were in a camp, and we started realizing that we're not getting out of here alive. So a friend of mine and I, we started making plans how to break out of the camp. And as we were making the plans, we realized that if we escape, then the Nazis will kill at least 10 Jews that remain to make a lesson out of them. So we said, who said we're allowed to escape? So we went searching for a rabbi in the camp. And we were told there's one person who's very, very learned. He's a reliable rabbi. We went to him, we spoke to him, we told him our dilemma. We said, are we allowed to escape? Because if we escape, it's pretty certain that they'll kill 10 people instead of us, just to make sure everyone knows that's what happens if someone escapes. And the rabbi sat and thought for a few minutes, and then he said, look, no one knows if they're getting out of here alive. We don't know if anyone's getting out of here alive. It's not so clear any of us are getting out alive. Anyone who could escape should. You don't have to worry about the consequences, because everyone who can should. We're all on the verge of death where we are now. You can't make that calculation. Maybe someone else will die. It sort of looks like everyone's going to die. So under these circumstances, whoever can save their own life should. You guys should get out. So the two of them are about to finish their plan, and they move them. They move the whole group. They switch camps. Their whole plot goes to the dust. Okay? They're in this new camp. They're working, him and his friend. And one day, they're out working in the forest. And out of nowhere, it starts pouring rain. No one was prepared for it. They hadn't seen clouds earlier. It was such a surprise that even the Nazis were taken by surprise. Everyone ran for cover. So him and his friend are in the middle of working. They look up. They look at everyone running for cover. They look at one another, and they both think the same thoughts. Let's go! So everyone's running for cover, including the Nazis, and he and his friend run into the woods together. And they're running, and they're running, and they're running, and they keep running. And they know that it's a matter of minutes before the Nazis realize they just made a mistake. They start making a count, realizing two people are missing, and send the search parties after them. They run for everything they're worth. And they're running, and they start hearing dogs behind them. They start hearing chasing behind them. And they go deeper and deeper in the woods. And the Nazis weren't prepared for such a chase. So they make it. They get to the partisans. And they spend the rest of the army with the partisan army in the forest. So he makes it out alive. But that night, after he makes it out, and after he gets into the partisan camp, he has a dream. And in that dream, he's facing the people he was in the camp with. And in the camp, he sees faces. And he sees a group of 10 people step forward from the camp, 10 people that he recognizes. And they start walking towards him, and they start telling him, because of you, we were killed. Because of you, we were killed. And they approach, and they're approaching him. And in his dream, he sees them approaching him, and he doesn't know what to say. This was what he was scared of. And he's standing and he's watching them approach him. And this is the nightmare that he sees night after night. He sees these same 10 faces coming out of the camp, approaching him and yelling at him, because of you, we were killed. And then, at the height of the nightmare, he grabs himself and he says, but I asked the halachic question. I asked the halachic question. I asked the rabbi what I'm supposed to do. And I did what the Torah says. And with that, he wakes up in a cold sweat. With that statement, I checked out and I did what the Torah says. I did what I was supposed to do. I verified the halacha. With that answer, he breaks out of the nightmare. Until he can get those words out of his mouth, he's sweating, he's shaking, he's in the nightmare. The second he can say those words, he wakes up, he's in a cold sweat, but he's out of the nightmare. And this is the dream that kept on going in his mind for all those years after the Holocaust. We can understand it. This is the dream he had told Rav Natan Siegel. As much as I'm a psychologist, I haven't figured out how to overcome my own nightmares. Now, Rav Natan Siegel told us the story, and I think there's tremendous message. This was the message he was telling us when he told the story. You're here learning Torah, and it's a new thing what you guys are seeing at Mechon Meir. It could be that before you came to Mechon Meir, everything you knew about Torah was Hillel, Omer, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Right? It could be you went to day school and you thought being Jewish was feel good, be good. be nice, be a kind person, have good intentions, and suddenly you discover, wait, there's a whole system, there are 613 things I'm supposed to live up to. They're called mitzvot. I can't shave with a razor. And on Shabbos, it's not enough that I'm a good, kind person. I can't turn on a light, and I can't have my cell phone on. And when I want to eat kosher, it's not just about being vegetarian. I sort of have to make sure my leafy vegetables don't have bugs in them either. So suddenly, there are a million details you might not have been prepared for. Suddenly, Torah is a system. It's not just this feel good, be a nice person, be a kind person. There's a system. But I think the story teaches us how empowering the system is. In life, we are often faced with challenges, with real moral questions. What's the right thing to do? It's a very hard question. I'm going to share with you a shaila that came in last week. Okay? I get a phone call from a professor at a university in Jerusalem. The professor says to me, I gave a test. And after the test, I get a phone call, I get an email from the ethics committee. The ethics committee, I'm not present when the test is administered. And the ethics committee caught a student with a piece of paper, notes that he brought into the test. And now the ethics committee is asking me, do these questions, do these notes, are they considered cheating? In other words, they want to know one question. Would these notes have facilitated him getting a better grade on the test than had he not had them in front of him? And he says to me, the answer is yes, but only 3 points. Meaning it would have helped him for 3 points on the test. He said, no, if I answer yes, he will probably get kicked out of the university. It will go on his student record. He will never again be accepted by any normal university in Israel. His whole future is doomed. Meaning he will probably never be able to get a PhD. He will never be able to get any normal degree in this country. What am I supposed to answer? Do you guys think the answer is obvious? I'll tell you one question I asked him. I asked him, if you try to play to his benefit, if you try to give an answer, I want someone else to answer this, or if you were, let's say you would say, it doesn't affect the test, can they check it? Will they give it to other professors and look at it? Could you lose your job and your license if you try to help him? Meaning, are they, or whatever you say goes. Is there any option, or do you have to risk your own job by trying to help the student? Can you call the student? Can you try? Is there? I'm just sharing with you a very real ethical question that came up last week. The professor calls me from the university. If he gives the answer that seems obvious, yes, it helps, he ruined this person's future. Financially, the person is probably never going to get a college degree. So you could say he did it to himself. Right. Is that what you want to say? So I'm just sharing with you that the when we deal with the Torah is giving us a system because life is filled with questions and life has complexities. It's not just an obvious yes or no. There are real complexities, and I could spend the whole night telling you stories of questions that come in that are complex that you, I think, if we split up into two groups into a discussion setting, everyone here would have an opinion about what's right and what's wrong, and I could hear all sides of the opinion. It's not about our opinion. The Torah gave us a system. The Torah told us how to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and that's so empowering. It's so empowering that a man 30 years later can look the people in their eyes who he thinks he caused their death and answer them and say, I did what was right. I'm very sorry if you paid a price for it, but I did verify what was right. Now, part of what we try to acquire during our learning is that level of respect for Torah. I always believe in honesty. I believe that if right now you're still questioning, wait, am I supposed to go with the system or not? Did the system prove itself to me? That's great. Ask questions. That's what we're going to be studying during the course of the year. We're going to learn about the system. Not only the details, but also the proofs, the supports. Why is this system so right? That we're going to be studying. But the idea where we're trying to get to is to have such an appreciation that I can say what that professor said. I could look someone in the eye and say, I'm very sorry if you're not happy with the outcome, but I went with the system and I know I'm right. So I can break away from that feeling of guilt. So with that, I want to begin the night just by mentioning, to my mind, the most powerful story I heard from Rav Natan Siegel, this story. And now we'll continue, perhaps,